Now, this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this Sunday is Rusty Keeler. Welcome, Rusty.
Thank you.
Rusty, we start this show with just a kind of the question that everybody grimaces at, which is, you know, who are you? And in that question, we're really just looking for a story or a few labels or things that help us to get the conversation started.
Sure. Who am I? I, like you, am a human being on planet Earth and moving forward one step at a time and trying to be playful and look at the deep side of life and weave that into my work and try to put good things out into the world.
And you have just given me a picture of your kind of soul as you apprehend it. And what are some of the labels that you wear in this world that other people might ascribe to you?
I'm a friend and a son. I am a playground designer and a musician, an artist, a cartoonist, photographer.
Lots of interests. Yeah. You got a rich life, rich with interests and activities and relationships. So you also brought some music to get us started with.
I did.
This is is it pronounced Ahmad or Ahmad?
I say Ahmad, but Ahmad.
It depends on whether it's pronounced in the traditional Arabic way or
That's
not.
That's right, or the upstate New York
upstate
way.
So it's from an album, Happy Moods, Little Old Lady. What do you want to say something about this song before we listen to it or afterwards?
Sure. Yeah, it's funny. The first three pieces of music that I picked, they're all these mood musics that I listen to, and I'll just put this album on. I have it on vinyl, Happy Moods, and I didn't even know the name of the song before I picked it for this, but I put this on in the morning, and I've listened to this album, I don't know, 1,000 times, and it's just this, it just kind of bathes you and hear something new in it every time, and it's just kind of like happy noodling wake up. Make breakfast music.
So right. I thought we could start with that. We will wake up the show with Ahmad Jamal, Little Old Lady from the album Happy Moods.
Thank you.
And that's Ahmad Jamal and Happy Moods. And our guest on this Hour of the Made of Clay Report is Rusty Keeler. So, Rusty, looking back at your life, what kind of major experience kind of got you started or kind of brought you to consciousness that you were a person with a purpose?
Yeah, so I grew up in upstate New York.
Uh-huh.
I was actually born in Ithaca.
Uh-huh.
And I grew up in...
One of those rare animals.
That's right. They exist. And then I grew up in Skinny Alice. My parents were teachers in Auburn. And had a, kind of happy-go-lucky, free-range childhood in Skinny Alice. You could roam around on your bike. You kind of felt like you owned the town.
Right.
And then, after college, I kind of got that pull to go west.
Mm-hmm.
The way many of us do. And I ended up in the Pacific Northwest. And it was one of these experiences of just trusting, just being a pure optimist. Like, I had no job and no, mm-hmm. No prospects. I was like, but I went to school for industrial design. I had my portfolio. I was like, I'm just going to go out there and interview and see
what
happens.
Design is big out there.
Yeah. And just kind of, I knew that like your life's opening and just felt like, all right, I'm ready to kind of start my life and see what happens kind of mm-hmm. with trust and openness
mm-hmm.
and, naivety of a young 20-something.
Right. But trust and hope is one of the standard definitions of the word faith.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
mm-hmm.
also confidence, confi, with faith,
mm-hmm.
the quality of living with trust and hope.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how you launched at the age of what, 22, 23?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Interviewed like 16 different times, all these different companies, and then finally got this job with this playground company.
Mm-hmm.
And they just got bought out by this big Danish company, and they wanted to come up with a whole new line of equipment and look really deeply and purely at children's play, and they just needed someone to come up with ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So here I come, my portfolio, and so I got this great job and really just like to express my creativity. I just had so much energy and so much excitement for like my first job
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And I loved that for like the first 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I did amazing things. And I learned deeply about children's play and how it's more than just running around blowing off steam, but it's really emotional development and social development, intellectual development, all wrapped up, and spiritual too.
And physical skill. I mean, not the... Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like everything's wrapped up. And so I love mm-hmm. that. But interestingly, after a while, I kind of had this almost disappointment. And maybe I went through like first time ever feeling a little depressed because I was kind of asking myself, as far as life goes, like, is this it? Like, you get your job. And I remember thinking, like, when you're in elementary school, you want to get in middle school. When you're in middle school, you can't wait to get to high school. High school, college. College, can't wait to get your first job. Woohoo, I got my first job. And then after a while, I was like, oh my gosh, I just looked at my whole life, like, am I just going to have a job my whole life? Oh my God. And then felt a little isolated. And then at the same time, it was like a real opening, being on my own and soul searching time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And for me out there, my kind of spirituality kind of opened and blossomed. And I got really connected to the kind of the Native American philosophy and earth-based kind of spirituality mm-hmm, out mm-hmm. there. Did my first sweat lodge out there and... That really resonated with me, that connection to the land, mm-hmm. to the earth.
And so what, so how did that experience change what's come since?
Interesting. I ended up having another big experience where I had the opportunity to then leave that job, go to a sister company in the Netherlands,
mm-hmm.
live in Europe for a year, and as a playground designer, and then that's when all my ideas shifted, and I changed from doing play equipment kind of things that you see in monkey bars, schools, and that kind
right,
of stuff.
Right, all the sellable products of
mm-hmm,
playgrounds.
Mm-hmm. I started thinking, wait, instead of products, we should just do a place, make a beautiful place, and use landscape, and connect children to the seasons. And I had this funny experience where I was first designing a product, and I was like, the job was to do sculpture. I was going
right.
to do play sculpture you could put in the city, as you're going to the bank and that kind of stuff. And I wanted this sculpture to change over time, or that you could read a book under it, or you could climb it, or it would make sound in the wind, or you could be mm-hmm. under it for... And then suddenly I realized I was trying to design a tree.
Right.
So it's like, well, why don't we just put trees in children's environments? Why don't we just create natural spaces and that kind of stuff? So I came back. And then, of course, I was inspired by the community built movement and all the folks at Leathers Associates. And kind of put this idea of like wanting to really connect children to nature and the seasons and the cycles of life right at their school, right at their childcare center, places that they're at day after day after day. That's really their introduction, not just to the outside, but to the planet and to life.
Right, right. One of my shticks as a young person was that when you're given the tools to play with, then play becomes, in a sense, work or your job. But if you take what's around you and learn how to make it playful, you have then created a life. And so much of what we do undermines our creativity and undermines our owning and creating the world that we live in. So children have always taken the environment of the adults around them and made it different. Mm-hmm. And that's a powerful, powerful thing that only people who have a way to step back and see it from a slightly different angle, maybe they're shorter, maybe they're lighter, maybe they're whatever, you know, they just use it in interesting ways. And to design for that is just to accept that we make the space we live in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's a tough lesson for a lot of folks.
Uh-huh. And it's interesting, too, because I think now, in my thinking, the most successful children's spaces or design spaces are actually not designed by adults. Yeah. They're either just what they find outside in the street and vacant lot and, you know, of course, the woods and nature. But then also this idea of creating a space where kids can do whatever they want. And we've been experimenting with that at the Ithaca Children's Garden with this place called the Anarchy Zone, where it's all just loose parts and trees to climb and shovels to dig with and cardboard boxes and boards and tires and straw bales. And then kids can just do whatever they want, like child-directed play where adults stand back and honor it and let them go. And of course, amazing things happen.
Right, right. And what? How would you describe the amazing things that happen? How do you unpack that?
You know, at first, children may look at the adults like, is this okay? Is it okay if I drag this stuff around? Because maybe, you know, kids aren't used to that, just having like this total freedom. But then once you, when you see it, once you give them the freedom, once you just give them the thumbs up, like, yeah, go for it, they are dragging straw bales around and they're building forts and they're creating all sorts of crazy contraptions in the trees, or they're digging like volcanoes that multiple kids can get inside these holes and, you know, all sorts of just amazing things that adults would never, ever think of. And that's the difference, too, as a designer, thinking, all right, I'm going to design something that's going to be playful and fun, and I'm going to really take into consideration and play all children's needs. That's great. And it's great to have, like, the intent to do that. But it's still an adult's version of what children, you know, what's play. Yeah.
Right. Well, even when adults move into their own homes, they play because they want to make it their own. That's what nesting is about. Mm-hmm. That's what all this making it change, the changes that you want to have happen. Now, I want to go back to one thing because I really connect with this. I grew up on a self-sufficient subsistence farm in Missouri, and we would go out and we would dig tunnels back into the dirt banks, but not too far because they might collapse. And we had all sorts of stuff, and I played around old farming equipment that was no longer used or no longer viable technologically, and could take the things apart, put them back together again. We were able to both create and to recreate the environment that we wanted. But we went. There was a funny thing happened around the age of 10 or 11 when I no longer wanted to simply to play with what was there. I wanted to in some sense, make it better. And so we had granaries that had been, you know, chewed away from rats and different aging and whatnot. And I was 11 years old, and my dad had died a few years before, so we were living in a different sort of way. My mom was working as a nurse's aide for the minimum wage. But we had enough resources around. She said, well, I can't let you tear that granary apart, that structure apart, but I will let you take out one board at a time and replace it one at a time. And that way you'll learn how it's made, and you'll also fix it in the process. And then that took several years of my spare time. But it was a really kind of a neat transition. So work and play began to kind of flow into each other. Is that where you're headed with this? Or is that kind of, because that for me was a logical step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, some is just seeing children have just their mm-hmm. natural creativity. Mm-hmm. Also, it's what they're discovering as they're going, mm-hmm. and I like mm-hmm. that idea of if you've seen, you know, as you're taking your time doing it, you're seeing the structure of this, and then mm-hmm. I'm sure it gave you new ideas for other things yep. to work on, other projects. Some also is connecting children to the natural world, but strictly through play, mm-hmm. through their discovery. We're not teaching them. We're not saying that this is a yellow-breasted who knows what, but they may just be discovering this stuff as they're playing, or the idea of the sycamore trees are right there at the Anarchy Zone. We don't have to tell them. They're getting an intimate connection, a love of it, and then children can, you know, grow and want to, as they get older, maybe they'll want to learn more about that or mm-hmm. do studies as they get older, or maybe they'll become stewards of the land because they had those deep connections
right.
and love.
So for you, play is getting at this motivation for life, which is based on love and curiosity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I'm mm-hmm. hearing here, mm-hmm. and not about mm-hmm. obligation or not about channeled by somebody else's. You may not realize it, but you're on somebody else's assembly line when you're playing on their playground, which was designed for you.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And as opposed to making it more or less your own.
I just heard this great quote by a four-year-old after he was asked, "What is play?" The teacher was asking, "What is play? What is play?" And he paused, and then he said, "Play is when adults stop telling me what to do."
Mm-hmm.
And that idea of like adults, you know, maybe well-meaning adults
right.
and setting things up and da-da-da, but really just, I'm working with people to just step back and say yes and watch what kids do. And mm-hmm. there's this whole philosophy of play work from Europe, that there's professional play workers who really do this, and they staff these playgrounds, and it's really they may add materials and then they step back mm-hmm. and just allow children, really that mm-hmm. honoring the child's right to play.
Right, right. And do you see, you're really focused on children, but how do you see this play work going into them carrying it on in their lives?
Well, interesting. There's this written piece years ago called The Theory of Loose Parts, mm-hmm. and it reminds me kind of your story mm-hmm. of the construction part. It's the idea of letting kids see that you can take things apart, you can build things, that you can make your own things, you can rearrange materials. You have control and the power over that, and then it gives you something inside that you have a little control and power over your own life and of the greater environment. Most of the time, the environment is set.
Mm-hmm.
The city's designed, the sidewalks are there, and the streets are there, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. But really, we want empowered citizens who realize that their voice is important and their ideas can make change and that they can work together to really, you know, shape their social world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I think if you could bring it back to childhood, having those mm-hmm. experiences where they're empowered, you know, their ideas are supported and
right,
respected.
Right, right. You're talking about... well, empowering the person, but I think we want to kind of you're talking about it in a different way than like community organizers would talk about it. When you want to organize something, you get people to fit into roles and to activities that they may consent to, but the structure is defined often by people other than themselves. The kind of empowerment that you're talking about is the power to define from the word go, this is my life and this is how I want to live it.
Mm-hmm.
And I may run into all sorts of guff doing that, but I have a sense that whatever changes I make, I need to own, and whatever are foisted on me, I need to accept that I have done my best so that I have the power to come back next time's fighting or accepting with a little more wisdom. Mm-hmm. And the goal of community is wisdom. And persons who are strong and whole. The goal of society is organization and where you fit in the structure. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And you are very clearly identifying with that community side in the terms that I bring to this analysis. And so much of our education and so much of our lives denies that works in a different logic. That works in a logic that is embedded in the person and all their quirkiness emotionally, intellectually, and physically until they find some peace and wisdom and wholeness. I'm sorry. I just preached a sermon. It's Sunday morning.
Amen. Amen. Say it again.
Wow. This has been more of a more. We connected more on this than I ever imagined we would, because I didn't really know you before you walked in the studio this morning.
That's right.
We had never met.
Yeah.
Let's can we cut to your next song for just a second?
Sure.
And we will let me do the station ID. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Rusty Keeler. And Rusty has brought a Mozart piece, I believe, that we're going to listen to next.
Yeah, so maybe just a quick little intro. This is another sets of music that I listen to. This is what I listen to when I'm working, kind of when I get in the mode. And it's kind of funny. It's Mozart, but it's one of these, like, Mozart for the creative mind. Like, it's a mix of Mozart stuff. So I'm a little embarrassed that I'm not listening to, like, a full piece and everything. But it's amazing. They've, like, selected music that kind of gets your brain going. And it's another one of these things. I'll just put it on. I've listened to it 10,000 times. And I only notice that I only really notice what's going on when suddenly it ends, and I'm like, oh, I gotta start it again. So I love this piece. This is, you know, the classic Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star kind of music.
Yeah.
And but what it really does for me, it's like this idea of just pure playfulness. Like, it's just all these, it's 12 variations on the melody. So I can just see the playful virtuosity going.
Beautiful. Was a playful rendition of the Twinkle Twinkle Little Star theme, many different ways. It's a Mozart piece, right?
Mm-hmm.
And our guest on this hour, you're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and our guest on this hour is Rusty Keeler, whose life is an exploration of play. I just, you know, dubbed you that. So, right, but actually, you more or less claimed the mantle. So we kind of we came through some conversations about playfulness before that were very they kind of made me think about a lot of things. You talked about how this music allows you to kind of disappear into it, and you don't notice that it's gone until it's gone. What's going on with you?
I feel like some parts of my brain are being activated. Mm-hmm. Like I think of that last piece, and it's just like all it is of all these variations, and it's this, it's creativity and it's playfulness, and it's, and then somehow I'm just like swimming through this mood, this sound environment. And then that helps me for my brain to be on in that way too.
And when you're doing it, are you doing other stuff? Are you work? This you said this is a piece of music that you listen to while you work. How does this affect your work?
Yeah, it's interesting because I'll listen to this and then the whole collection that this is a part of. When I'm designing, when I'm drawing, when I'm thinking, maybe when I'm writing, it's like I am going to be in this mode of creativity and creation, and then that it just kind of helps me. Yeah,
and for me, I would frame it slightly differently, but it's, I think it's a friendly amendment, maybe, or maybe just an alternative view. Mm-hmm. But in meditation, one of the things is to hold everything else as constant, so you can then be fully immersed in what it is that you are doing. Mm. And for me, having a certain kind of for people who do physical labor, having a rhythm to the work allows you then to focus on the precision with which you're doing the work, because the rhythm sets a structure, and in that structure you can do improvisation, or you can change the direction of the hit or the direction of the movement. In the same way with meditation, I want to become empty or one with my space from a certain point of view, but then the things that pop in become significant, and I acknowledge them and let them go, and then we see where they go. But it's allowing you to submit to a structure outside of yourself, or that can be seen or appreciated outside of yourself, while also then focusing your energies more productively.
Yeah, I feel like I kind of disappear into this pool, this kind of amoeba-like pool of it, and then some part of me though is right there and crisp and clean and going forward. But just like you said, that you kind of have something to bathe into.
Yeah, cool. So, you know, you didn't start with this awareness. You kind of hit a wall in a job, which it sounds like from what you've said now, it wasn't playful anymore.
Yep. That's exactly right.
What have you had to learn in order to kind of keep your focus productive? What have you had to kind of learn about the world and about yourself to navigate this space that you find productive?
Sure. It's funny because at some point I realized that I love doing all sorts of different things. And I think in part of why that job, I felt kind of, you know, and ended up feeling a little depressed, because I was just doing one thing. Right. And then it started getting even less playful, where you're just redesigning the thing that you already designed and re-engineering it. And I was just like, oh. And so then I found that when I started I had these ideas, I wanted to do natural playscapes and come back and do them. And I started my own business, and then boom, right away, you're wearing every single hat that there is, and you're doing, you know, you're doing your design part, but that's only a portion of you doing graphic design, you're doing photography, I'm doing, you know,
and you're doing
all
marketing,
stuff.
And you're doing management.
Yeah, every single thing. And it's interesting because that, you know, the Enneagram, the
Enneagram.
Enneagram, I'm a number 7, which is basically, it's the generalist and the person who likes to do essentially that. You like to do everything. Like, life's about new experiences and doing new things. And in my mind, it all relates. Mm-hmm. And with a business, it all relates. But for myself, I realized I really like that and I really need that. And then when I'm doing that, I can really express all sorts of great things and wrap it up in ways that people can access these ideas, whether they're actually building a playground or hearing a presentation about it or seeing pictures that inspire them. Mm-hmm. And so I think tapping into just that innate excitement for life and new experiences, I was able to make that work for me.
Right, yeah. Right. So, and what you're saying by implication is that this is not for everybody, mm-hmm, but it mm-hmm, is very much mm-hmm. for me, mm-hmm. and it's also saying that, you know, this is not, you know, the art of entrepreneurship is as much of one of curiosity and play as it is kind of negotiating and controlling people by the deals that you make with them, and that's mm-hmm. That's a different way of being. In business, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that strikes me from your story is that it's very hard for people to have that open-ended approach to life because it can be threatening financially.
Mm-hmm.
It can be
mm-hmm.
hard to find your feet
mm-hmm.
That way. It can also be threatening to other people who don't know how to take you seriously. And I don't know if you've run into any of those kinds of reactions or experiences.
In terms of
making a go of it, as also in terms of other people getting who
mm-hmm,
you are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, a lot of my friends, when I was kind of jumping ship to doing my own thing, you know, they were setting jobs or corporate jobs mm-hmm. or, you know, it feels comfortable and you think you can't get out of that kind of stuff. So maybe you think you're a little crazy. But at that time, I was kind of lucky to be able to, you know, I didn't have much to lose. And I just had a lot of kind of fire and spunk and mm-hmm. excitement and felt very driven and guided to try these ideas out and then to spread the ideas. And I was reading at that time, I was really inspired by Buckminster Fuller.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. I just came across this book that inspired me, like, 20 years ago, and it was him talking about being guinea pig B, that he was going to dedicate his life to his mission, his ideals, the calling, and just live according to that, like not mm-hmm. live according to how comfortable he's going to be or, you know, even what the effect on his family, but that they all kind of went forward with his ideas and ideals, and it was an experiment, like, can you live purely by what you believe in?
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's like that trust that we talked about mm-hmm, earlier. Mm-hmm. Like, I believe that this is really important. I'm going to go forward and give it my all.
Mm-hmm.
And I also believe that I will be supported. If it's really true, if it's really resonating with me, I believe that I will be supported and guided and helped along.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found that that's exactly the case, that mm-hmm. you step off, you do what you believe in, the universe will conspire and help push you along. And it doesn't mean that you're not going to have to work. I mean, I think that's it. We can do anything we want, but you have
right.
to work. You
right.
have to work,
not only, work, and work. You have to take the lean times mm-hmm. and the longing that mm-hmm. comes with that, the unfulfilled longing. And you also are changing what you perceive as possible, but you're changing because you perceive that it's not possible, not because somebody else is telling you it's not possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can appear very stubborn to people when you need to be convinced finally before you can do something mm-hmm. different. What you have just described is how to live what some might kind of almost blithely call self-actualization. And that kind of had a faddish tone from, you know, in the mid part of the 20th century where people were just doing what they wanted to do. But when you're really doing this kind of work well, you're doing it in light of all of the very real structures and constraints that are around you. But you're choosing to be the person who is the primary actor in your universe, not necessarily the definer of your universe. There's a big difference. If you're an actor in your universe, you're not the center of everything. You see what I'm saying?
Hmm.
And a lot of people who want to take on that agenda of developing their talents and their sensitivities and going with their mission, they have to realize that they do that in a world where they're not the center of the universe. Once you get that lesson, I think you can live the life you've just described. But, you know, it takes a while to figure that out. One of the beautiful gifts that I had was I needed to start working to help financially support my family when I was 11. And I did so working anywhere from 10 to 20 hours a week, and then 20 to 40 hours a week, and 60 hours in the summertime. And that helped me to say, I have to be accountable to those who are not me, but I also have to be accountable to me. And getting clear about that allows you to engage structures and organizations that may share no values with you or other people with whom you have very little. And so I'm wondering, does that, are there, where have you had to kind of buck up against that which is completely at odds with you, but you still have to deal with it?
Well, it's interesting. Okay. You know, as far as with the play stuff, I think in the beginning I was very, I think I felt center of it all. Like it was my, job.
It was
like,
your domain.
Yeah, my domain. I had to push this through. I had to, you know, I felt everything was on my shoulders and I worked really hard, but it could also be stressful because I felt like my life, I make or break it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
right, right.
So I really, you know, I put a lot into it and I was, you know, mm-hmm. it could be nerve wracking. But then I think as I've gotten older, I've realized that I'm more just a part of a giant flow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think I started this at my Saturn Returns, my late 20s kind of thing.
Right.
And now I'm in my mid-40s, and I realize there is a giant flow that's going. And, you know, you can steer it, and you can push it, you know, your little direction.
Right.
But it's a lot better when you can just sit back and go with it.
Right, and you make very slight, you move, you don't... You don't push the river. The river will flow by itself.
Yeah.
But you may paddle. You may put that oar in the water or paddle in the water in a way that it will take you in a slightly different direction. But it won't take you to a place you've already passed.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
getting realistic about stuff.
Yeah. There's another Buckminster Fuller quote that I just heard last year that I really resonated with. And I guess on his tombstone, the only thing it says is, "Call me Trim Tab." And so he was a big sailor, and I guess the trim tab on the rudder is like the tiny, like the Queen Mary will just have on its rudder just a tiny little trim tab. It's like a mini little flap.
Uh-huh.
And it's that flap that goes that starts the whole boat turning, but it's not a giant movement. It's like a teeny tiny movement.
Yeah.
And so that's what he felt like he was, putting all these ideas mm-hmm. in the world to get the whole society to change or culture to change or inspire other people. And I kind of like that idea of like, if I can just, you know, in my work, the things that I do, if I can just be a little trim tab mm-hmm. just to help the shift and then really just help inspire, you know, people who can do it a lot better than I can or more energetic than I am mm-hmm. or, you know, more mm-hmm. inspired or, you know, they can just, you know, go for it in a broad way. So I'm really happy to be, you know, whatever part I have in all this, yeah. I'm really happy to be a part of it.
Let's take a little break to music again. And you brought another piece, a Ravi Shankar and Ali Akbar Ka piece. We're going to play a portion of it.
Yep, so this, for me, is another one of these mood modes that I get in. And this is kind of, for me, before I start work, actually, I may do, you know, a set of meditations and kind of just clear my mind in space and, you know, do some readings and some journaling. And it's kind of this is the kind of stuff I listen to.
Yeah.
listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is some music from Ravi Shankar and Ali Akbar Ka, and it's Palas Coffee. How do you pronounce that? No way. But anyway, yes. Our guest on this hour is Rusty Keeler. And Rusty, how do you work with others who are not like you? I mean, you're kind of a unique character, or as we used to say, it's an odd duck. I mean, I grew up in an environment where people were actually encouraged to develop along the lines that you've described discovering, and I always associate the freedom to do that with being in a rural area, because mm-hmm. there are some constraints, but there's a lot of space for people to define the life they want to live. Mm-hmm. But how do you work with people whose values are very different from you? When do you run into these things, and what do you do?
Yeah, it's interesting. So right away, just mentioning the rural life, I lived in Spencer for 10 years, and you know, you're not in Ithaca anymore.
Yep.
Tioga County. And I got involved, you know, enthusiastically with the schools and doing art and music and all sorts of great stuff. And
Elementary schools,
yeah. Middle school stuff. And we started this whole group art house, community art center, and had performances and shows and all sorts of stuff just to kind of add some more life and art and spirit. Yeah, which was really great. And people really resonated with it. But I'm sure there are also people more conservative, used to a quieter kind of idea that mm-hmm. had raised some eyebrows. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so that was interesting. I always felt like there was kind of a mix of people like this and people don't. And then I even got involved in some Spencer politics. Mm-hmm. And then you start to just see a whole other world. And I think for me with my play stuff, you know, I travel all over and people are very excited to have me there and like my ideas and they want to hear. But in the Spencer politics, I was looked at very suspiciously mm-hmm. and, you know, didn't quite know what to make of me. But what I always tried to do was really kind of get beneath any kind of like red, blue, you know, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. Because I really feel like we are all in this community and we're all together and we can work together. And mm-hmm. and that was my highest thing of like, it doesn't matter like... Nothing really matters except us trying to like create a beautiful life for all of us, mm-hmm. all ages, all people, all political, religious, all that kind of thing. So I always felt like that's the basis, whether the people that I was working with felt that way or not. But that was always my kind of intent, to get beneath any of these kind of differences.
Right.
And I think that is actually a danger I've found with even like the green movement, or kind of what the spirit of even the Ithaca stuff is, that there can be we know the answer, the green idea, right. But even like with Ken Wilber stuff, the idea of like, we're going beyond that, we're beyond just green to really where we're all can work together. We kind of beyond.
Right. If we can't work together, we're going to be in enmity. And if we're in enmity, that's not sustainable at a certain point. Mm-hmm. And I think so. I actually worked in the Spencer Bennett Middle School for about 6 years.
Okay.
As a doing after school programming, as well as some special programming around drama in your life, drama in the kitchen. We taught people about mm-hmm. foods from around the world, and we made those foods in the after school program. We did African ways of life. We did Latin American ways of life. We did world religions. We did evolution and creation stories. We'd all this stuff, and mostly I found that if people could complain that they needed to be heard and you could hear them and then work on their agenda, then you could do almost anything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And people might have some suspicions, but if they saw that you actually heard their issues and you could work on their concern on the terms that they raised it, you know, or they show them, they could actually learn for themselves, this is the play thing, where they couldn't actually deal with it because it was a concern that didn't have traction. And that's a really important lesson, is to be alongside people who have to play with their issues until they figure out, oh, this is a bigger wall than I thought I was running into, and I can't blame these people for it. It's just a piece of reality that I have to come to terms with. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to get in a pissing match.
Mm-hmm.
You can then just, you know, you know, people figure out what they need to know and you can move on. I love that district. It was a lot of fun. We lost our funding and I couldn't do it. I'd done it for a number of years on a volunteer basis, but I couldn't at that point. Mm-hmm. So yeah, neat stuff. Mm-hmm. Really, really neat stuff. Mm-hmm. So before we get done with the show, and you have a long piece that you'd like to end with, so we're going to play a good chunk of it,
okay.
The music. But I want to ask, what do you do to restore your sense of balance, your optimism, your sense of strength, emotional, physical, when things get you down? What do you do on a daily basis, a weekly basis, a monthly, a yearly basis? I ask these just for people to start sharing what works for them.
Mm-hmm.
What actually works for, not what would you like for work, what
right.
works or doesn't work.
Yeah. So at home I have a little altar space and I will light candles and, hit a Tibetan bell and try to take deep breaths. I think that's when things get tight or my shoulders get tight, mm-hmm. I try to just like find a centered point and take some deep breaths. And just kind of get grounded in myself again. Being in Ithaca, water, visiting water mm-hmm. is always helpful to me. Mm-hmm. If I just go and I stand at Stewart Park and I look north at the lake and the hills and see the mood of the lake, mm-hmm. It's always changing, but then there's something unchanging about it. And if that can go inside of me, it always brings me back to a centered point. So I think, the idea of taking the time, sometimes when you're busy and you're stressed, you're like, I don't have time to go to Sturbad. But any time that I do, it brings me to where I need to be. And then, of course, you can go back refreshed to mm-hmm. tackle whatever you have to tackle.
So, and how do you know that you need to do this? How often? Some people have built it into their day at a particular time or their week at a particular time. But other people just kind of sense it and they deal with it or they try to sense it.
Yeah. I sense it later than I should.
Well, yeah, that's,
yeah, yeah.
That's,
yeah. That's, so I'm, yeah, yeah. This is great for me just to think, well, how could I build that more into a daily practice of like, what if you did it in a daily practice that you were always had that groundedness and that you didn't have to wait till I was pushed?
But I guess what I don't want to suggest is that you make it a structure.
Uh-huh.
Because if you are a person who needs to, for whom the structure is not helpful, then doing it, you will begin to resent it if you make it a structure. There are mm-hmm. some people for whom the structure really is like the background music. You put it on and you play mm-hmm. it every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, and they don't end up fighting. It's a ritual in the very best sense of the rituals provide the platform or the structures of our lives. And we all have them, whether we admit to it or not. But the idea that you can detect in yourself a change in energy or a change in an absence of generosity or a sudden loss of focus or a sudden disappointment or grief, if you can notice those things in yourself and attend to them without damaging others or yourself because you haven't noticed, that's, you may not know what to do with them, but you're telling me you'd rather be more sensitive to what's going on. And
sure,
that's good.
Sure. Yes,
and
right.
just by having this conversation means you will.
Uh-huh.
On some level.
Thank you, Eric.
Because when we become aware that it's a choice and we can make those choices, we tend to do the thing that feels better and mm-hmm. not the thing that feels worse. Mm-hmm. It's play, mm-hmm. which is kind of where we started. And I'm preaching. I'll stop. So you are a kinesthetic learner, I would say, mm-hmm. basically from everything. Mm-hmm. And that's why the play is so resonant with your life. Do you bring people along with you as part of your kind of spiritual discipline of caring for yourself, also attending to the others around you or bringing them into this community that you so easily inhabit?
Sure.
How do you
do
that?
Yeah. I think it often looks like I'm having fun. Mm-hmm. And so people want to have fun with me,
mm-hmm.
whether it's playing music or kids or my own son or my relationships or, mm-hmm. and that, it's like this mission for good. But the beautiful thing is that it's playful and fun mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. people want to be a part of that and want to be a part of good things and kind of joining forth, stepping together with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Where are you headed? Where are things moving for you?
Yeah, I really want to help people think about how they can provide more opportunities for children's play, how they can let go of some of society's fears of children outdoors and getting kids outdoors mm-hmm, again, mm-hmm. and that it's okay and that communities can look out for each other's children and that kids can be free and they're able to take risks and mm-hmm. have adventures the way that we may remember from our own childhoods. And that the beautiful thing is that people all over are realizing that they want to create these opportunities for children again, that safety at all costs has too many costs.
Right.
It's gone too far.
Right. And but before it became an issue of safety, it was an issue of everybody having the right experiences. You mm-hmm. have to do these certain things in order mm-hmm. to kind of grow
mm-hmm.
up,
mm-hmm.
And then it became a matter of safety, mm-hmm. and
fitting in as many things so you can get to the good prep school, good college, and
yeah.
all that, and realizing what really children need is time, space, and materials.
Right, right, and with that, periods of incredible boredom that they have to rouse themselves out of, and also periods of overactivity where they end up slipping and falling because they weren't paying close enough attention, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and all of these things. But they're the lessons that they learn,
mm-hmm.
and not that we teach them.
Yeah,
and that's creating an environment where we can learn together. Have you thought about what this implies for governance? This is way out of the blue. This is not where you normally live, but this is where I kind of live. And what you're talking about are places where people can perceive the lives that they're creating mm-hmm. as a playful effort at getting what they need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to think that this is creating empowered people, empowered children that become empowered adults that know that they can work together. Because they worked together as kids. They created a fort, mm-hmm. A treehouse, a playhouse as a kid, and on, and working together. And that's the beauty, that's mm-hmm. the best part of governance.
Right, right. But also in play, there is also transgression and injury and
oh,
offense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And,
oh,
and
yeah.
we often don't talk about that.
Yeah.
So, and this may be where, in the restoration, in the restitution, in the renewal that comes through play, how do you, in yourself, deal with those damaging or harmful things, or understand that as a part of a child's learning how to play? You can take it personally or take it socially or both.
Yeah, I mean, it's the real life.
Mm-hmm.
It's real life out there and in play. And when children really have that time, space, away from adults, kind of controlling and trying mm-hmm. to make everything...
Sure.
Certainly.
It be their way.
Yeah. Then, yeah, the good, bad, and the ugly happen. But then that builds the resilience and that builds the spirit to build strong character
right.
in kids.
So merely submitting to it is the discipline. Merely saying, this I will do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not knowing where it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Rusty, it's been wonderful getting to know you a little bit.
Thank you. You too.
And and you wanted to close this song with this session with a Taj Mahal song.
Yeah, yeah. This is like my happy song. I listen to it; makes my heart sing and makes me happy, smile, tear up, the whole deal. So it's called "Ain't Gwine Whistle Dixie Anymore."